Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's Live Bet Sunday. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. He's Will Hill. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, and we've got action all over the freaking place, including up in Canada, and it has nothing to do with the Stanley Cup Final. It's the RBC Canadian Open, and right now they're in a playoff, where I know earlier in the day there were a lot of names in the mix and a lot of names you had to Google. Because right now, Sam Burns, minus 140, Ryan Fox, plus 110, that's your playoff. It might as well be Corbin Burns and De'Aaron Fox to me, Will Hill, because I don't know who either of those two people are.
Yeah, Burns is a guy I've had a lot in the past. I think I won on him once, and it's one of those things where you bet golf. If somebody wins for you, you get a soft spot, and you go back to him. So kind of feeling that FOMO right now that I didn't have Burns, didn't have anything in this tournament to begin with. But curious what Burns' odds were pre-tournament. I think I scanned the odds this morning. I don't remember seeing Burns near the top, so he must have made a late run today. Must have just missed his name. So always exciting when you get in a playoff. That's the one thing. It's hard to hedge golf, but if you've got these long-shot tickets and then you get to a playoff, well, then that's very hedgeable. That's very scalpable. So congrats to anyone who has those two live or otherwise at big numbers. Always fun to cash a golf outright. But U.S. Open next week, I'm sure VSiN will do a great job covering that. VSiN.com, the Long Shots podcast. We got some great golf handicappers that will be all over the U.S. Open, which be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm seeing Burns was like 28-1, 30-1, depending where you shop before the tournament began. Now he's in the mix. That's what happens when the big names are out. There's opportunities to like jump in on someone at a good price. So Sam Burns, Ryan Fox, dueling it out in the Canadian Open. We'll update you and let you know who ends up winning in that one. Some updates from around Major League Baseball, just because we took a break there with the basketball for a moment. Mets-Rockies still going on. It's 12-3 in the eighth, two outs. Paul Blackburn is in for New York. The Mets are up, obviously, on Colorado, I should note, 12-3. And 75-1 if you like the Colorado Rockies. Let's see. I want to see next year's NBA championship odds are up now. Who's 75-1? Just for comparison, the Rockies to win today would be like next season in the NBA if 75. If the Grizzlies 65-1 won the championship. Is that that crazy, Will? The Grizzlies winning the championship next year?
I mean, they're probably not winning it, but I don't know. They always short pay, I feel like, on these long shot futures. It's never like it doesn't feel like a fair number when you're in that 65-70-1 range. Interesting, Blackburn's in. I noticed that too. Why? He started on Monday. He's worked his way back from some injuries here. What is this? Are they skipping his start? Is somebody else coming back? I know Manaea's, you know, on the way back, but he's not there yet. And he was bad in his rehab start, I believe, on Saturday. Any idea why Blackburn's in as a reliever?
I don't know, unless they're just running out of arms and he's just getting his work in. Let's see. Paul Blackburn enters today's game and really fully stretched out with a chance to record the Mets' first four-inning save. How is he going to get a save? They're up by a million runs. Anyway.
You can enter. If you enter with so many outs to go, you can get a save regardless of the score. There's like different qualifications to get a save.
Well, yeah. Okay. I guess that makes sense. But I don't know. Because to your point, Montas had an awful like second or third outing in the minors in his rehab. So I don't know who's on the horizon as a starter for the Mets. They're going to have a logjam at some point. I just don't think it's right now. I don't know why they're throwing Blackburn. I'd have to look at next week's schedule for the Mets, where they're in Denver right now. I imagine tomorrow's a travel day, so that might
maybe
help.
They got a couple
there.
Travel days. They don't need that fifth starter for a while. That would be my guess, but very odd regardless.
Yeah, they don't play till Tuesday at home versus Washington. So I think that's playing a role in this. And Blackburn's not even scheduled to be a part of the rotation. It says Canning, Peterson, Sengel, Holmes, McGill. Back to Canning and Peterson. So at the moment, they don't really have a spot for Blackburn. So I guess he's their swingman for now. That's one thing about the Mets that's fascinating that I didn't see coming this year. I was really nervous about them, about from a pitching perspective, because they found magic in a few guys a year ago, like Severino, and they obviously let him walk. I'm at a point now where if David Stearns identifies a pitcher in the offseason that he thinks he can figure out, you just let him do what he wants to do, because they are the reclamation team now. If you're a guy who has good stuff but doesn't have quality results, go to the Mets. They'll figure you out and they'll get you paid. That's the way it looks right now, because everyone in that rotation is pitching way above their skis.
Very impressive. Now, I wonder, a team with championship aspirations, do you trust the Holmes and the Cannings and the Petersons, McGills against the Dodgers in the NLCS or against whoever in a World Series, or, you know, in a playoff spot? We'll see, but the numbers speak for themselves. The numbers have been outstanding so far, so be interesting once Manaea, Montes, these guys come back, how you sort that out, but that's one of those good problems you deal with, and those things have a way of working themselves out. So, no, I totally agree. The Mets do a great job rehabilitating these pitchers.
I'm going to ask a question. You can tell me I'm a moron, but I'm getting
a little.
You're a moron. Yeah, I very likely am a moron at the end of this question, but I'm allowing you to do it, and I will not be offended. I'm getting itchy when it comes to MVP bets, and it's like a foregone conclusion in both leagues, right? It's Judge in one, it's Ohtani in the other, and outside of injuries, like I don't see a world where it's not those guys. However, Aaron Judge is a guy who's gotten hurt before in his career a bunch. He's been healthier of late. And Ohtani, I mean, at some point do people get exhausted with the narrative? And if the Dodgers don't have the historic season that everyone was anticipating, is there a chance we could open it up to someone else? Pete Alonso was back up to 30-1 last night to win NL MVP. And I think everyone's hard on Juan Soto because the numbers he's putting up. I think Pete Alonso has been the biggest beneficiary of Juan Soto coming over, whereas Soto benefited from Judge in New York with the Yankees in the Bronx. I think Alonso's benefited from Soto in that lineup for the Mets. And Alonso went yard today twice. He's up to 17 homers. He is up to 61 RBIs. I think Pete Alonso could potentially, where he has an opt-out in his contract, he could be having a monster pay-me season. Is 30-1 worth jumping in on where Ohtani's such a big favorite?
It's not the worst idea I've ever heard. At 30-1, why not? I don't know that I would make it. I took a shot on Lindor middle of the season last year, thinking same thing, voter fatigue. Who knows? Maybe they'll use the betting against them, as Francisco Alvarez has just gone deep to make it 13-3 Mets. I don't know. The problem, though, is Ohtani's going to start pitching, it sounds like, pretty soon. And it's been long enough. It's been almost 2 years. If you add him into the rotation, he starts to give even six innings every five, 6 days on top of his offense. Barring some injury, and then an injury that's going to take them out of both, hitting and pitching. I don't know. I would worry that any bet against either Judge or Ohtani, as you hinted at, might be dead money at this
point. No, I know. And the argument against me then would also be is because the Dodgers have, you know, underachieved based on expectation, they're still the best team. I don't care about record. I just mean potential, the most talented team in baseball, most dangerous team in baseball, however you want to word it. The value part of the award comes into play when they've thrown a million different starters. If he helps solidify that bullpen and calm things down and get them going in the right direction, that just adds more to the MVP, where we're going to be looking up and he's going to be minus 2,500 to win the award after two or three starts. So that's the argument. I just thought 30-1 with the year Alonso's having just feels too long, but I'm with you. I had 60-1 on Lindor last year. You know what that ticket got me? A bunch of people going, man, you got a great number.
Yeah. What was I going to ask? I don't know. You said something a minute ago about, was it Ohtani? The thing about taking the 30-1 or the 60-1 with Lindor last year, you can get yourself in a position where you can cash out at least at a better number. What would this be, four MVPs for Ohtani? Because he won two with the Angels. Now this would be two with the Dodgers. This would be his fourth one if he wins it.
Yeah, that sounds right. I regret the cash out option is nice because I regret not doing it with a Hunter Green Cy Young ticket that the book was basically marking as a winner 4 weeks into the season. It was I wasn't gonna get the full ticket back, but I was gonna get more than double my bet, five or six times my bet. I should have cashed out because now it looks like
more often than not, though, it's such a ripoff based on the odds where it's hard to stomach it, where you know what? You're either in a position of weakness with these cash outs and it's just like, all right, what's the point? I'm in a position of weakness. I can't monetize this ticket. Or if you're in a position of strength and they're giving you a decent buck, they're not giving you enough. And you're like, I made the bet. The bet's in good shape. Why am I going to take 50 cents on the dollar for what I should be offered here? It's just that cash out is very rarely a good play. Not never, but very rare.
No, it was just too early in the season for them to be grading it the way it was, right? Where it's normally late in the year you want to cash out and you'll lose some value. At that point you go, well, I know what the market looks like. I can bet the other people. It was May. and they're middle of May, early May, they're offering me a cash out for basically like the 75, 65, something like that percent of the ticket where I thought I was going to win. And it was just a situation where I'm like, I can't even bet other people in this market because I don't know who's going to be there in the end. It's so early in the year. I should have taken the cash out. It was stupid. It's pitchers.
He's hurt a lot too.
Yeah, pitchers go. By the way, speaking of, I do want to point this out. Paul Skeens Day earlier today, I did cash over 6.5 strikeouts on him. His ERA is 1.12. He has one win in his last seven starts. ERA over his last seven, 1.12. One win in his last seven starts. Hey, the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup are here, and ProfitX is offering the best odds all playoffs long. ProfitX is a peer-to-peer sports exchange available in 40-plus states, and it's the first of its kind in the U.S. You'll be able to make your sports picks against other groups of fans rather than against sports books. Exchanges guarantee you the best odds on average by 10 to 20%. You can even request your own odds. All you have to do is download ProfitX today with the code VSIN and earn up to $200 in profit cash over your first month. That's promo code VSIN for up to $200 in profit cash over your first month over at ProfitX. All right, a lot going on here. He's Will Hill. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Mets and Rockies in a laugher right now. The Arkansas Razorbacks putting the final touches on the Tennessee Volunteers' attempt to defend their national championship, up 10-1 in the eighth. In the other College World Series game in the eighth, UCLA leads UTSA 4-0. So it sounds like the Bruins and Razorbacks are going to Omaha. Who's going to hoist the Larry O'Brien? Or at least who's going to win game two? We'll talk next with Scott Reichel about that on the other side of Live Bet Sunday.
This is Live Bet Sunday on VSEN, the sports betting network.
That's right, Live Bet Sunday, VSEN, the sports betting network. He's Will Hill. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, and we've got an exciting game two in front of us tonight. Pacers and Thunder NBA Finals, where, look, a lot of us expected OKC to just roll right through the Eastern champs. And here we are with the Thunder staring at a deficit down 0-1, but they are at home here for game two. To help us break that down, we're going to bring in our guy Scott Reichel on the Progressive Guest Line. You know him over on X at Reichel Radio and the host of the NBA Gambling Podcast, part of the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. And he joins us now on the show. Scott, thanks for doing this, man. Want to get your overall thoughts first on the side in total before we dive into these props. See this game opening around 10.5, 227.5, with some movement where Circa's now moved to 11.5 in the last hour or so. Total has moved up a point as well to 228.5. When you're looking at that, would you do anything with the side or total in game two?
Yeah, first glance, I like the over in this game. I do think after a pretty ugly first half where Indiana turned the ball over 19 times, the game did pick up offensively. You saw 119 points in the second half there. I think it'll carry over into this game as well. You know, Indiana wants to play with pace. So does OKC. I definitely expect to see an up-tempo game between them. Should result in more points. I like the over. For the side, a bit tricky. People think that the Thunder are guaranteed to bounce back here. I'm not so sure they're going to cover this margin, though. The Pacers have been showing time and time again, even when they win game one, they're greedy. They want to win both games on the road. So I don't see Indiana rolling over. I think it'll be close. I think OKC wins the game. But 11 does feel kind of disrespectful here. Give me the Pacers plus the points. I prefer the over, though, if I had to pick one of those two plays.
Scott, you're very good diving into these props, which we'll get to some of your plays here in a minute. But, you know, part of figuring out the props is the usage. Very strange lineup, I thought, in game one for OKC. 23 minutes for Holmgren, 17 for Hartenstein. How do you anticipate OKC handles the minutes here in game number two?
Well, besides that, they also ended up starting Cason Wallace, and they benched Hartenstein, which was kind of crazy. Nobody saw that coming in addition to that. But I do think you're going to see a bit more of the usual lineup for OKC. They tried out Case, and they tried to showcase a bit of a new look to deal with Indiana's pace. And I thought it was fine, but I do think that Hartenstein had a great game. I think he'll play along with Chet. I see less Cason Wallace, though. I like him as a player. 33 minutes, though, does feel a little bit high for me. I do think he'll be around 25 in this game. I like his under PR for this game to segue into it. It's at 10.5 as a minus 105. He has had a less than 11 PR in six of the last seven. That against the Pacers as well. It's did a less than 9 PR in 3 of the last 4 against the Pacers. Played a bunch of minutes in game 1, still went way under this number. So to start off with Cason Wallace, I expect less of him, and I do think that's going to result in some unders on his props. Give me the under on Wallace, 10.5 PR at minus 105.
Scott Reichel is our guest, Sports Gambling Podcast Network, host of the NBA Gambling Podcast at Reichel Radio on X. Talk to me about Pascal Siakam. Had a really good game 1, 19 points, 10 boards, 3 assists. There's some games where I watch Pascal Siakam and I go, Scott, he's a mismatch for everyone. No one knows how to defend this guy. And there's other games where he disappears. But you like him when it comes to rebounding, which I think makes sense based on the style of this fight. What are we going to do with your two props when it comes to Pascal Siakam in game 2?
Yeah, so starting off with the rebounds, I'm going to go with Siakam over 7.5 at plus 114. He's had at least 9 in 4 of the last 5 games against the Thunder. So he's been good historically, had 10 in game 1. The main reason why the Pacers did end up winning the game, or why they were able to cut it on the deficit, was because of the rebounding differential. Did out-rebound OKC 56-39. Siakam had a great rebounding game, but Nesmith had 12, and Turner had 9. Haliburton also had 10. So Siakam had a bunch of rebounds with all those other guys having a bunch of rebounds as well. I see a lot of chances up for grabs. Siakam went over anyway. I think 7.5 plus money has a lot of value to it. Give me the over on that. For turnovers, though, Indiana had about 25 turnovers in the game, yet Siakam only had 1, and he's been quite good at actually limiting turnovers. The under 1.5 turnovers is plus 114. He's had less than 2 in 8 of his last 10 games. He's had less than 2 in 4 of the last 5 games against the Thunder. Once again, even with the Thunder forcing a ton of turnovers in the entire first half, Siakam was clean for the most part. So I do think that it's a pretty solid price. Give me Siakam under 1.5 turnovers at plus 114.
Scott, a lot of times you can do pretty well fading the popular players, playing them under their points total. Haliburton at 16.5, is that the way you're looking tonight here with Haliburton and his player prop?
Yeah, it is. Even though he had the game winner, he still went under this number in game 1. You're looking at Haliburton, who did a lot rebounding-wise, but the scoring wasn't really there, and he's not been good historically speaking against the Thunder. He has had less than 15 points in 3 of the last 4 against the Thunder. Thunder also elite against opposing point guards. They are allowing the second fewest points per game to opposing point guards. Haliburton, as good as he is, can be quite passive at times. We saw that in game 1, where it felt like he was invisible for a decent portion of the game offensively. Then he hit the game-winning shot late. Doesn't change the fact the Thunder are really good at defending him, and they have been in the past. I think 16.5 at even money is a good price. I'll take the under on that one. I think it's a good deal.
One of the strengths of this Pacer team, Scott, has been the depth. The bench produces. Different guys step up. It was Obi Toppin the other night. Against the Knicks, it felt like it was someone different every single game. It was brutal for me as a Knicks fan. And Oklahoma City plays a lot of guys as well, so you expect Indiana to not be afraid to go to their bench and run with them toe-to-toe. Who are we targeting off that Indiana bench when it comes to player props for game 2?
Yeah, so I'm going to go with the usual suspects here. I'm going to go with TJ McConnell over the 12.5 PRA at minus 114. He's had at least 13 PRA in 13 of his last 20. He's also been great against OKC. He's had at least 13 PRA in 4 of his last 5 games against the Thunder. We know McConnell can play with Haliburton, without Haliburton, does quarterback the bench unit, and he was solid in game 1. Do you think this number is still too low? I expect him to be involved a decent amount with the bench unit in terms of running everything, whether it involves mid-range jumpers, Nash dribble to set up layups, or even just finding open guys on potential fast break opportunities. Give McConnell over the 12.5 PRA at minus 114.
Scott, who wins the series in how many games?
So initially I had the Thunder in 5, and I felt pretty smart about it for about 45 minutes or so in game 1. Now I'm going to go with Thunder in... I think I might actually consider going with 7 in this one. I think Indiana has proven that they actually can get some good looks against this defense. We saw that in the late stages of that fourth quarter. The issue that I have, though, with the Thunder is the late-game offense. We saw that constantly in that Denver series. Felt like every game they ended up winning was a blowout, and every close game Denver kind of had an edge there. OKC's offense unraveled down the stretch. The defense wasn't that great either. To be fair, Indiana made a couple of nice three-pointers, including a banked-in three-pointer by Miles Turner, which helped out. But I do think OKC's offense in the half court in late-game situations has still been problematic, and J-Dub has not exactly been great in late-game spots. Chet got benched in game 1. There are some questions with the supporting cast. So I think Indiana can steal a couple more games. I will pick the Thunder to win the series still. I do think they are the better team. But I see it going distance now. I'll go Thunder in seven.
Yeah, I mean, the hard part about the handicap is you were right for like 98% of the game. It was going exactly how you expected. Thunder dominating, and then the Pacers with another insane comeback. I want to ask you a hyperbolic question, and I understand that it is, just going into it. But this core for Oklahoma City, they're young, they're unique in the effort that they play with defensively, which generates their offense. If I were to set the number at they win 2.5 titles, this core, over the next 8 years, would you go over or under that 2.5 number?
I would go under for a couple of reasons. First of all, salary cap stuff. They're going to have to pay a lot of these young guys a lot of money, and I feel like it's going to be tough to do. Not to mention when you have, I don't know, about 5,000 draft picks, you can package a couple of guys to maybe get a superstar if you want to. If they wanted to make a case, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but for like a Giannis or if they want to bring Durant back or something, they can easily do it, and at that point that would make some guys more expendable than others. I do think OKC, they might win a title or two, but in reality when you have that many options with Presti, being the, of course, person who created the entire roster and the phenomenal draft capital that they have, I do think it is somewhat likely under the current apron system they might end up moving off of a guy or two if needed, not to mention the fact if there are some superstars available that want to go there. If Giannis says, I want to go to OKC, are you going to say no? Of course not. He's Giannis. He's a top three player in the league. You're going to obviously trade for him. So based on that, I'll go under with this core. Shea will be there. I think maybe another guy will be there too. But can they actually afford to keep Shea, Chet, and J-Dub? I am skeptical on that. So based on that, I'm going to go under the 2.5 with that core.
I understand. Scott Reichel, you can check him out at Reichel Radio over on Twitter, Sports Gambling Podcast Network, and, of course, the host of the NBA Gambling Podcast there. Thanks for doing this, man. We always appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Enjoy game two.
See, Scott brought up my favorite scenario for the Thunder. Kevin Durant goes back to OKC, the prince that was promised, and all the hate going out the door. If he could deliver them a title, like let's say they somehow lose to Indiana, and he's the piece that comes back to win them a title next year, is all forgiven for going to the Warriors? I don't know if it is, but it makes it a little
sweeter. Yeah, but you just said there's no chance. You just said Indiana has no chance, so this your scenario, according to you, is not viable.
Yeah, go to
hard to make these fake NBA trades now. The second apron really, you know, complicates things and what can and can't be done.
Yeah, go to VSiN.com/picks. I'm wrong about things all the time, Will. What are you talking about? Just because I say something doesn't mean it's going to happen. Believe me, you wouldn't know me. I'd just be winning these bets left and right. I'd just be alone in a room just slamming the keys, getting these bets down. All right, we do have more bets that we do have to get down when it comes to NBA Finals Game 2. I have two more player props for you. We'll look at that and more coming up next on Live Bet Sunday.
This is Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Man, what a day to be doing this show. This is Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Dustin Sweetle, hanging out with my guy Will Hill, just to catch you up on what's gone on, and still have more to come, by the way, with Sunday Night Baseball, Thunder Pacers Game 2. Earlier today, Carlos Alcaraz won the French Open. He was down two sets, was as high as 60-1 at some sports books. Five-hour match, comes back, is victorious, and wins his second straight at Roland Garros, fifth Grand Slam at 22 years old. Put that off to the side. Right now, at the RBC Canadian Open in golf, Ryan Fox and Sam Burns are in a playoff. Right now, Ryan Fox looks like he's favored at minus $2, plus 170 on Burns. And I've been told, I mean, you should just expect it at this point. Our own Wes Reynolds, in his write-up previewing the event at VSiN.com, had Sam Burns at 28-1. I just assume when an underdog, when a long shot hits, that somehow Wes Reynolds predicted it 5 days in advance. I don't know about you, Will.
Yeah, that VSiN.com subscription pays for itself and then some with you know, with all these picks from Wes, these other guys. It's a must-have. You go to VSiN.com, you get your money's worth, that is for sure.
Yeah, plenty of college baseball, too, going on right now with the Super Regionals. It looks like Arkansas and Tennessee in the ninth. Razorbacks are up 10-2. UCLA in the ninth on top of UTSA 7-0. assuming nothing Indiana Pacers-like happens here, both the Razorbacks and the Bruins will be booking plane tickets to Omaha, where we're sending Money Moves and Follow the Money this week to hang out for the College World Series. But speaking of Wes Reynolds, all the bets, all of our plays, everyone here, they're all available at VSiN.com. You got to become a pro, though, to get full access to everything we do. And did you know, if you do that right now, you'll not only get a full year for $199, but you'll get a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook from our guy, Josh Applebaum. It's a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smarter NFL bets. You sign up now, I mentioned, you get the picks. You also get betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access on the VSiN Watch app, and of course, our VSiN NFL betting guide that will drop July 1st. Oh, I just realized that's less than a month from now. Guess I got to start doing my NFL prep. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. All you have to do is go to VSiN.com/subscribe and use the promo code BOOK to sign up. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Dustin Sweetelson, Will Hill, taking you through the action here in the afternoon on Live Bet Sunday. I mentioned we've got NBA Finals Game 2 tonight. I still have two plays I really like that I want to get into, but a quick look at what's happened since we hit the air, and we've gone final in San Francisco, Will. The Atlanta Braves lose 4-3 on the road against the Giants. I believe that's a sweep, if I'm not mistaken.
Sure is. They lost seven. Braves have lost seven in a row, all by one run.
Seven in a row, all by one run. Look at the standings. Atlanta's now 10 games under 500. They're about to be 14 back of the Mets. And the Phillies seem like the only challenge to the Mets in the East. Dare I say the Mets are going to do this thing and win the division? You asked me a question in the break. Are the Atlanta Braves completely done? Do you believe it's worth even looking at them anymore in the futures market?
I do think they're done. The only reason I hesitate slightly is because just less than a year ago, the Detroit Tigers, we would have had the same conversation and wouldn't have thought twice. Yeah, the Tigers are done. The Mets, going into June, the Mets, of course they're done. And the Mets were two games away from a World Series, and the Tigers were a win away from the ALCS. So I think they're done. 10 under is quite the hill to climb. I know there's, 100 games left, but, the season is long. The season is not eternal, though, so I think they're done. I think they're done. Yeah, and they were plus 285 to make the playoffs yesterday when we were doing the show, but that's two losses ago now. I'd imagine they're getting in that, 350, 4-1 range to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Let me ask it this way. What number would you need on the Braves to make the playoffs right now where you'd actually bet it?
Five, 6-1.
I'm
not – look, they're behind the Nationals by a few games.
By a few games. By a few games, yeah.
And by the way, the Nationals are a scrappy team. They're an interesting squad, but the Atlanta Braves should not be in this situation. When you think about the core that they have, and I know Acuna was coming back from the injury, but Riley and Olson and Albies and Murphy, but sometimes the nature of the Braves not willing to pay a big contract to a guy like a Max Fried comes back to get them. Right, they were going to rely on Ronaldo Lopez, who's going to miss most of the year, if not all of the year, with an injury, instead of just shelling out the money and keeping Max Fried a Brave for life. Right, and you're also relying on a guy in Chris Sale, who just won the Cy Young, who threw the most innings he's ever thrown in seven seasons. So I think there's a lot of things to question when it comes to Alex.
Profar didn't work out. Profar got suspended.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to question when it comes to Alex Anthopoulos. You also knew coming into the year that Spencer Strider was a huge question mark, and it's not like he makes a lot of money either. So I look at this Braves offseason, and I go, sometimes a team like Atlanta just says, we have a good core in place. We always find guys. But when you're constantly calling them up, right, and using them, there's fewer and fewer options down the pike to come support your MLB team. And that's where you need to look for outside reinforcements. That's why you need to find a way to find diamonds in the rough that you can develop and turn into something. You don't always have to pay top dollar, but you do need to find guys that fit what you do to work around that core. And I think this is a failure of the front office for this team to have an injured season like they did a year ago and just say, well, we should be healthier next season. That is a failure coming from the top.
It's tough, though, because what was their season win number over under 93.5? It's not like you and I were sitting here saying, oh, man, how can the number be 93.5? They had all these offseason issues. They lost Fried. They lost all stuff. I mean, we could have bet as much as we want under 93.5. I didn't bet it. I don't know if you did. So You know, I don't know where to direct the blame, but you're talking about a team that was supposed to win 93, 94 games, that are they even going to finish 500 at this point? They're 10 games under. Maybe they rally and they get in like the 80 range, but what a disaster season it's been for them. And they're not alone. Orioles were in the 90s for season win total, over under number.
Yeah.
They're on the way to being 12 games under. The Diamondbacks, the Rangers, the Red Sox, a lot of these teams with high expectations are simply not firing this year.
The Braves are currently at DraftKings plus 350 to make the Major League Baseball, plus 320 to make the Major League Baseball postseason.
Not enough.
Not enough. When it comes to the NL East, the Mets are the favorite at minus 190. The Phillies are plus 160. The Braves are 22-1. The Nationals are 250-1. I'd rather have a little bit of the Nationals at 250-1. Not that that's going to happen, but yeah, the Atlanta Braves are dead. And everyone who knows me from the network knows I love long shots. I love taking chances. I don't mind missing on big numbers because you only have to be right so many times on 22, 25, 30-1 for it to pay off in the end. I am officially on June 8th, 2025, declaring the Atlanta Braves dead because they sat on their hands and just expected to be healthier this year, and it wasn't enough because the Mets got better and the Phillies are as consistent a team we have in Major League Baseball at this point in time. And you can look at Alex Anthopoulos for just relying on that core to step up again after a down year the year before for them being in this predicament. That's just where I stand when it comes to that. More on Major League Baseball with Sunday Night Baseball in the next segment, where I have two plays when it comes to Carlos Rodon and the New York Yankees, where they are major favorites against the Red Sox. Where, Phil, Will, you as a Yankees fan, was the peak Yankees Red Sox, Pedro, Zimmer, 03, 04, 05, 06, 07, that run?
100%. Those games, it felt like every nine innings was just like nine innings for your life. Yeah. Those games were must watch. The teams in the offseason would go toe to toe to try to get every player and compete for every player. It was special. They met in the playoffs in two, you know, seven game, both iconic series, really, with the Boone walk-off homer and the great game 7 and 03. And then 04, history with Boston being up 3-0 and down in the ninth inning of game four and winning that series ultimately in 7-2. Just all-time great series back-to-back. The offseason stuff, you know, the rivalry, some bad blood. That was just, there was everything. That was just a great, great baseball.
Yeah, that now they both operate as big businesses. So they make very efficient moves in the offseason, which has been horrible for baseball. I think we can look back to the Yankees and Red Sox changing their business operations as more of a business than trying to win titles and going toe-to-toe, as that's when the baseball decline started nationally. I may be crazy, but that's my general view, because that rivalry carried the sport for over a decade. It was incredible.
Although I think I completely agree. Although I think baseball's had a really nice uptick the past two or three years, maybe because it's betting, it's every day. People are looking at something, betting the sun. I feel like baseball's had a very nice resurgence here this last couple of years. Good postseason last year, Yankees and Dodgers, the Alonso homer against the Brewers, the Mets. I feel like there was a lot of juice last year's postseason.
I never know because I love baseball. It's my favorite sport. I lock into it most nights, if not all nights during the week. So I never know what the perception is. It does feel like on social media people care more. But that's mostly people celebrating their home run props. And that's because that is a new epidemic in sports betting Twitter, where you get these victory. We get it. It's plus 520. But you hit 1 out of 12 this week. Okay, can we acknowledge that? But the victory laps are endless on gambling Twitter. Oh my God, calm it down, people. I get it. Tarek Skubal's K prop has been profitable until it's not anymore because the number moves. You can't just blindly bet these things. I don't get it. We'll wrap up the show with our best bets, plus two more props on NBA Finals Game 2 and Sunday Night Baseball next on Live Bet Sunday.
This is Live Bet Sunday on VSEN, the Sports Betting Network.
Wrapping things up here, this is Live Bet Sunday on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Just some updates from around sports. The UCLA Bruins are going back to Omaha, winning the Super Regional there. Arkansas just two outs away from doing the same. They will join Coastal Carolina, Louisville, and Arizona, who await them. We are still waiting for Monday. Murray State and Duke to decide who ends up going to the College World Series. Two more college baseball games yet to come on the card. For all the information there, go to VSiN.com for all of our articles. We still yet, Will Hill, Dustin Sweetelson here. We still have Sunday Night Baseball to come in, what's it, about 25 minutes. Red Sox and the Yankees. It's your boy, Hunter Dobbins, taking the bump for Boston. And Carlos Rodon and the Yankees laying a big, fat, juicy number in the Bronx, Will. Rodon has been simply magnificent this season. Feels like he's settled into his role, picking up the pieces for this pitching staff after losing Gerrit Cole at the beginning of the season. Right now, minus 245 when it comes to the Yankees. The Red Sox, plus $1.96. The total is 8. If you were attacking this one, what would you look at?
Hard to lay 245. Hard to lay a run and a half at home when you're probably not going to get the ninth at bat if you're winning. You're not going to get the ninth at bat if you're winning. You get to that point where you're just hoping for like a two-run walk-off if you're batting in the ninth. It's tough. Yankees are minus $1.40 to score first. If you want to play it that way, see what Rodon can give them a clean first, then the Yankees with their top of the lineup can jump on board. That would probably be my play, if anything. But this is expensive. It's rightfully expensive. Rodon has been outstanding. Boston's got all sorts of issues. You know, Dobbins isn't great. Their bullpen's not great. He's probably not going to give them much length. Boston does hit well in that ballpark. They play the Yankees tough for the most part. Devers has had some success against Rodon. Devers just hits everybody that has a Yankee uniform on, especially, you know, in that building. So I would probably play Yankees to score the first runs, a prop like that. I'd probably look towards over 7.5 Ks too, but this is paying a lot of juice here, either laying the run and a half, which I think is really hard to do at home, or paying the minus 245 is quite the price to pay. I'm sure some people, you know, look at, oh, Yankees money line with OKC on the money line, and I'll get that down to around, you know, minus 135 or something. I'll play it that way. Okay, if that's what you want to play, I understand that.
I don't hate that.
Yeah, it's not the worst thing.
I wish I could have added the Mets to that against the Rockies today.
Yeah, I know. You and me both.
That's the move going forward. If there's opportunities to pair whoever's facing the Rockies on the money line with a big number, with whatever else is happening in sports, you just do that going forward. Look, Boston, I think the number is appropriate here. Boston's on a 4-9 run. Yankees on a 9-4 run. Dobbins, 4.06 ERA, has only completed 6 innings twice in 9 starts. And Rodon's been dynamite. I think he's under the radar. 8-3, 2.49 ERA, 98 strikeouts and 79 and two-thirds innings pitched. 0.72 ERA over his last 4 all-Yankee wins. He's had 8 or more strikeouts in 3 straight starts. He's been pretty good against Boston in his career. Not amazing. 3.83 career ERA. I like him in this spot to go over the 7.5 strikeouts. He's red hot. Boston scuffling offensively. The one player prop I'd look at from a Boston perspective is I just thought the number was too low. Rob Refsnyder. Guy's made a career of just mashing lefties. He's 4 of 12 with a homer and 2 doubles against Rodon. I did go over a half total bases at minus 137 juice. A little more juice than I'd like to pay, but it's only a half a total base. So he gets a single, we cash this thing. That's where I'd look at from Boston. But I like Rodon over 7.5 Ks. And I'm just going to say it. Rodon's in the mix for AL Cy Young. 33-1 is too big of a number when his numbers are right there with everyone else at the top. Skubal's in a different league. I understand that. But if Skubal has a bad start or two, I think Rodon can catch him. I know Fried's been awesome for the Yankees as well. I'm not sure it's sustainable Fried's been so dominant. Because of that, I think Rodon's going to be there at the end. And if the numbers are comparable, having that 33-1 could allow me to get creative in August or September with that ticket. Can I convince you to join me, Will?
Yeah, that's not bad. I mean, I worry Skubal is as good as he is, but 33-1 for his numbers, he's on the Yankees, so it's not like he's going to fly under the radar. Worry a little bit that Fried is there and going to steal some votes or split some votes, that whole thing. But at 33-1, I don't think you have a bad bet whatsoever. Speaking of strikeouts, you mentioned the Rodon strikeouts. Did you see this with George Kirby? 14 strikeouts today against the Angels. He really struggled his first 3 starts back from the injury, but we know he's got a lot of ability. We saw that ability today. 14 Ks. Tied for the most anyone has had all season. I know Skubal had 13 a week or two. That was 2 weeks ago, Memorial Day weekend. I'm trying to think of who had 14. I did see just now somebody post that it ties for the most anyone's had all season with 14.
Wow. What a performance from Kirby. We hit in-game plus 120 on the Mariners when they were losing. They end up winning that 1-3-2. Should note the A's won 5-4 over the Orioles. So they win in that spot. Game goes under.
5-1. 5-1.
What did I say, 5-2?
5-4.
Oh, 5-4. I meant 5-1. Jacob Wilson, two more hits. He's up to 372 batting average and leads Major League Baseball with hits. Our Jack Caglione ticket. He's going to have to start hitting some homers if we have a chance at 45-1.
Or trade Wilson to the National League or something like that.
Yeah, it's always the prayer when you're betting these types of markets. Hey, introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. All you got to do is open a GBank Visa signature card. In the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. Then you'll receive $200 in cashback rewards under GBank Visa signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match. Then VSiN completes the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription through October 31st at a $200 value. That's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. Head to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions apply. Our best bets are going to be with NBA Finals Game 2, Will, where the Thunder are coming off a playoff loss, a miraculous comeback from the Indiana Pacers. This thing opened with Oklahoma City laying 10.5, total of 227.5. I'm seeing behind me at circa. It is right now the Thunder laying 11.5, total of 228. What are your best bets for Game 2 tonight?
I'll play over 120.5, the team total for OKC. It's a way to back OKC in a desperation spot without laying the gigantic number, and that is a gigantic number. I know OKC can be good for it. 54 double-digit wins, I think 12 30-plus point wins. I get it. Boy, this Indiana team is relentless. They're not one of these teams that, all right, we steal game one on the road. We're just going to punt on game two and be satisfied. No, no, no. They've won game two in New York up 1-0. They won game two in Cleveland up 1-0. This team doesn't stop. So I have no interest in laying the 11.5, but I do think OKC over 120.5. I think a couple things. We saw them force turnovers. We didn't convert many of them into points. If they can do that more, that's, you know, more offense there. And I just think they're going to play with more snap, more pace, more quickness. Way too many times in game one, you look up 12, 13 on the shot clock, and they're just standing around, just getting into their offense, walking the ball up. I think there's going to be an emphasis on them to go quicker, play faster, get into their stuff a little earlier, try to find some more instant offense, early offense. So over 120.5 is the way I'm playing that.
Yeah, I've got five plays for you, and I can't emphasize this enough. I think for Oklahoma City, Jalen Williams is vital to their success. When he's going, they're a different team offensively. I'm going over 32.5 points, rebounds, and assists combined. His last two off of Thunder losses in the playoffs had 47 and 36. I also like him 8-1 to be the leading scorer in the game after one quarter. Ooh. Had 14 points in the first quarter of game four, coming off a loss to Minnesota. I think it's vital they get him going, and they get him going early. We've seen SGA be very selfless in the early part of a lot of these playoff games. Doesn't call his number until the second half a lot of times. I think Williams is the guy they focus on getting going at home. I also like Lu Dort over 15.5 PRA. I don't understand this number. Had 20 in game one, had 27 and 20 in the regular season matchups with Indy. He's going to be on the floor to help deal with Tyrese Halliburton defensively. Then Chet Holmgren. Over, I can't remember the exact number, points and rebounds, assists combined, it is 23.5. Indiana allowed the ninth most points, second most boards to power forwards during the regular season. He fits the pace of this game, and he has to play better than he did in game one. I think he bounces back. And then Pacers, team total under 108.5. Awful loss. Oklahoma City has held their opponents to 106. 87, 93, and 126. That is under in three of four games coming off a playoff loss. That's how I'm going to back OKC, because I cannot lay the first half of 8, and I cannot lay 11.5 when it comes to the game. Indiana's proven to be too good to do that in this spot, so I'm going full player props and the team total for Indiana under. All of it available at VSiN.com/picks. Will, it was a fun one. What do you say we reunite next week and do it again?
Anytime I get to hang out with you for 3 hours, I feel bad even getting paid for it.
Oh, well, just remember to submit your hours, because you still should get paid for it. It's heavy lifting. I'm a heavy person to lift at times. We all know that. Right? My doctor reminds me every time I get on the scale. There's a lot of heavy lifting involved if you're involved with in the Dustin Sweetelson business. Hey, don't go anywhere there, because coming up next, Live Bet Sunday continues. Our guy Scott Seidenberg over at Circa is going to take over for 4 hours. He'll preview game two of the NBA Finals. Then it's cashing out with Mark Melusis to end your weekend. Stick with us right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.